Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Malcolm Bock, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. He also teaches at Plattsburgh State University in New York, and Malcolm has carved out a bit of a specialty for himself applying the technique to running. He's got a book called Master the Art of Running, and he also has another book called Master the Art of Working Out. Now, we've done a previous interview on running, and today we're going to talk about how the Alexander Technique can be useful for anyone who works out, who does exercises of any kind. Malcolm, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Rob.
Could you start by giving us a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Absolutely. Today, my definition of the Alexander Technique is it's a method for becoming aware of unnecessary tension in everything we do. In this case, unnecessary tension applied to working out so that we can learn to do our workouts more easily, more freely, with less chance of injury and maybe even more enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. So less unnecessary tension. Now, I'm thinking for a lot of people who do vigorous workouts, tension is what it's all about. Lifting weights, doing running faster, swimming harder. And you're saying maybe not so much?
Well, tension is a bit of a four-letter word these days. If we substitute the word energy for tension, running faster, yes, it takes more energy because you're burning up more fuel and so on. And working out means that, you know, rather than lifting a glass of water, you might be lifting a 30-pound dumbbell. That's going to take a bit more energy. But it doesn't necessarily have to result in the kind of what we would call in the Alexander world misuse that we often see in gyms where doing a curl, you could just picture yourself lifting a glass to your mouth. That's what a curl looks like. You know, substitute a dumbbell for the glass of water. Oftentimes when you see somebody doing a curl, it looks like they're doing it with their neck muscles. And this is what I would call unnecessary tension, where somebody who's doing it well, you don't necessarily see the head being pulled forward and the neck muscles sticking out and the whole back, you know, rounding. You see a continuous state of poise with the person maybe putting a little bit more energy into the fact that they've got to lift a 30-pound dumbbell. That's not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination, particularly of those of us that say with animals, when you've got to haul a 50-pound bag of kitty litter up three flights of stairs and then put it onto a shelf. It's nice to have a little bit of extra energy or a little bit more strength in the bank.
Mm-hmm. And what could you say a little bit about what the problem is when someone ends up creating, for example, extra neck tension? Why should someone be concerned about that?
Oh, okay. Well, two things I'd like to say about that. Why should they be concerned about that? Well, first of all, exercise. Oftentimes, unless you're doing a whole body exercise, which is not a bad idea, but if you're actually targeting something a bit more specifically, let's say you're trying to build a bit more strength into your arms, if you're tightening up your neck, that exercise is not about building up your neck muscles. So you're actually misdirecting your effort. It's not going where it should go. And so that's part A. Part B is that by tensing up your neck and pulling your head out of alignment, you're now creating a lot of compression and distortion into your spine, as well as you're going to influence your breathing, and your general state of being is going to be it's going to be distorted. So you're actually creating whatever strength gains you might get in your arms, you're actually sort of creating a lot of problems or potential problems in the process. So I think that working out should not create more problems, you know, for you. It should be actually about, you know, giving you benefits. So you don't want to sort of take one step forward and four steps backwards in the process of trying to get a little fitter.
Well, and I would think the other issue might be that if you start to develop a habit of tightening your neck in, say, say the weightlifting example, that could start to carry over into other activities of your life. And
absolutely.
From an Alexander technique point of view, but I'd like you to elaborate on this a little bit, tightening your neck while you're doing things is... Well, for starters, it interferes with your coordination and balance. It's not a good habit to develop. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, yes. Well, first of all, let me just admit, you know, to our listening audience that I go to a meeting once a month called Neck Tighteners Anonymous, where I stand up on a little platform and tell everybody that my name's Malcolm and I'm a neck tightener. And there seem to be quite a lot of us out there. We're very well represented in the Alexander community as well. Although, the neck tightening, not a great thing to do. As I said, it's misdirected effort. You know, when you're tightening your neck, you're not putting the energy where you want it to go. And that doesn't just refer to or apply to people who are working out. If you're a musician and, you know, you're trying to play the piano, and rather than your energy going into the keys, it's going into your neck, you don't make as good a sound, or you don't play as quickly, or you get fatigued, or you start to get hand problems. There's all sorts of things that come out of tightening your neck. I don't know too many good things that actually come out of tightening your neck. But I can tell you there are a lot of bad things that do.
And, you know, from one of Alexander's big discoveries, Alexander being F. Matthias Alexander, the developer of our work, is that how you manage that 10 to 12 pound weight of your head on top of your spine has huge implications for how you coordinate yourself. And even a little bit of excess tension can make a huge difference in a negative way. And certainly if you're spending a lot of time lifting weights or doing something along those lines and you're tensing your neck a lot to do that, it's pretty easy for that neck tensing habit to slip over into other activities.
Well, absolutely. It's there anyway. I mean, next time you open up a jar of jam and the lid's a bit tight, just, you know, if you have a momentary lapse of consciousness and awareness, just notice what your neck is doing while you're trying to open twist the jar lid off, or a door sticks a little bit, or, you know, anything. The first thing that seems to tighten is the neck. And and I think that robs us a little bit of really the strength, the power, the coordination, the freedom that we could have, because things get stuck and things don't move as easily and things don't move as, you know, as much as in a team or coordinated kind of way when the neck gets locked up. So,
So having discussed all the dangers of this excess tension, maybe could you say a word or two about how you work with people who are athletes and who are working out a lot, and how do you approach working with them, and is it any different from students in other areas?
Well, one of the first things that you have to recognize is that if somebody is, let's just take an example, doing an exercise like a push-up or lifting some weights, some free weights. So immediately, as soon as they start to do that, there's a certain sense of urgency that comes over the person who's doing that, because there's more strain involved. There's a certain level of demand, either from the weight or from, you know, trying to move your body through the action of that a push-up would take you through. Immediately, there's a certain urgency that comes over, because most people feel like, oh my goodness, this is hard. This requires me, you know, I need to get through this, or I'm going to collapse or, you know, fail in some way. So what I generally do is to try to get the exercise, first of all, into a manageable load. So in other words, if somebody has a really hard time doing a push-up, let's say from their feet or even from their knees, I'll have them do a push-up off the wall, which is very easy for just about anybody to manage. And then that gets them to slow down enough so that they can begin to use the kind of constructive thinking that we teach people in the Alexander technique. So, for example, rather than just trying to get their 8 reps or their 10 reps done as quickly as possible before their muscles fail them, when the load, you know, has got to be sort of a more manageable level, you can now get them to pay attention to whether or not they're tightening their neck, or whether they're actually moving where they're designed to be moved, or where, let's say, the demand of the exercise has got them to sort of compromise their movement just to kind of get it over with. Example would be when somebody does a sit-up and they tend to move their neck and head up much more quickly than their back, so they're actually ending up doing neck ups rather than sit ups. When you get that to, you know, you change the exercise a little bit so that it becomes much more manageable, and then they can actually focus the effort where it should go, and not where the urgency or the demand or the load has kind of caused them to inadvertently move themselves or move their weight. So that's where I like to start, is get it to the point where it's something they can manage. They can have enough awareness while they're doing it to stop things that don't need to happen from happening, and then also have a sense of what's going on while they're doing it, as opposed to just thinking, okay, 6, 7, 8, 9, and grinding out that 10th. Because I think from both a short and, more importantly, from a long-term point of view, exercise shouldn't be about strain. There are moments where you will maybe want to put a great deal of energy into something, but for most of the time, you know, particularly in the early stages, if you're just beginning things, it should be quite manageable. The effort should be pretty manageable. And that allows us to do it more intelligently, more consciously, to not make the kinds of what we would call in the Alexander jargon end-gaining mistakes. In other words, just trying to get it over or get through the set any way we can, you know, without paying attention to what's going on in our bodies, what kind of distortion, strain, even danger we're putting ourselves into whilst we're trying to finish a particular exercise or a particular set.
Mm-hmm. And you said just a little while ago, purpose of exercise is not to strain yourself. What do you see as the purpose of exercise? How would you answer that question?
Well,
I put you on the spot here, Malcolm.
Not at all. I'll give an answer, and let's just say that if you ask me the same question in a week's time, I might change it a little bit. But I think the purpose of exercise is to get stronger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the saying goes, there's nothing wrong with being strong. And, you know, I know being strong in the Alexander world, you know, sort of people kind of, you know, scrunch a little, you know, get a little bit nervous and all the rest of it. But I say, geez, when you've got to put lift a baby in a car seat, you know, 3 feet in front of you, you know, and it's raining, you know, on a dark and slippery night, and you got to try to stick that damn thing in the middle of the back seat, believe me, you appreciate being a little bit stronger, you know. And the babies, you know, you don't have time to sit there and inhibit and direct and hope for the best. You just got to get it in quick and get out and not hurt yourself or hurt the baby. And I'll tell you, being strong really helps. And maybe we're not in those sorts of situations all that much, but you know, in good, what I call intelligent strength or good strength that's available for you when you need it is a wonderful thing to have. It's like having a bit of extra cash in your bank account, you know, when that, you know, all of a sudden you need four new tires, mm-hmm. you know, for your car. And, you know, you're just sort of wondering, well, where's the, you know, the $600 going to come from, right? Rather than risking life or limb, it's nice to have that little bit of extra there for you. And I think the same thing goes for exercise. You know, we're not farm workers any longer. We're not hunter gatherers. We most of our lives are spent in a much more sedentary kind of fashion. And as a result, you know, a lot of the things that our grandfathers could take for granted, it's more a question of use it or lose it. You know, we aren't particularly strong. We're very good. You know, our butt muscles maybe get, you know, good at kind of, you know, supporting us on the chair, but maybe that's about it. They mm-hmm. you know, so exercise is perhaps regaining our natural birthright, mm-hmm. you know.
I like your yeah. distinction, your qualification about exercise being to develop strength. It but then as you qualified it, I'm not sure your exact words, but basically functional strength. Strength that can actually assist you in doing things that you're actually likely or maybe even not always likely to have to do. And just to get back a bit to that, the whole neck tension issue, if your pattern of developing strength in your arms or your chest or whatever is coincides with developing a lot of tension in your neck, then the kind of strength you have isn't going to be terribly useful in actually doing real world activities. And I think we can see that with I go to a health club pretty regularly to swim, and I see a lot of the magazines that are around that people have left there. And I every once in a while we'll run into a weight building magazine. I look at the pictures of the guys on the cover, and I think, you know, they have a lot of strength, but I don't think it's actually going to be available to them that well in real life. And when they get older, I imagine they're going to pay some price for that as well.
Well, most of those pictures that you see in magazines are, you know, are like any, you know, like models in fashion magazines. They're not real. These are people who've sort of, you know, bulked up a lot, and you know, they're probably shaved and oiled and lit and you know, and all the rest of it. But I think one of the misnomers, you know, at least in the Alexander world, that, you know, if you've got big muscles, then you must be muscle bound and tight. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anything could be further from the truth. I think some of the tightest people I've seen are skinny little, you know, mothers that you could basically, you know, almost blow over. And they're tighter than a well digger's ass, if you pardon the expression, you know. I mean, you can't turn their heads.
We've just lost our under 12 contingent, Malcolm.
I mean,
no, but yeah. I know exactly. I know
what
you mean.
About. There's some guys that are huge. Absolutely. I'm talking about football tackles or in rugby prop forwards. You know, they look really tight, and they're amazing how free and flexible their head is. You know, on top of their spines, and what kind of movement they can do, and they're bloody strong, and it's usable strength. I mean, they can pretty well do whatever they want with that kind of strength.
But I think what you do get, though, sometimes is people who just focus on building up the image of strength, and I think there is a danger of becoming muscle bound there. Now, a football player has to actually move and do things, so that.
Yeah,
it's a different situation.
Well, we're talking about people who are exercising to you know, to build a certain look. You know, we call it, you know, pumping up the beach muscles for men, at least. You know, and it's just arms and chest.
Right.
So
right.
You know, and the abs, and they want to pump everything up to look good. Okay, and that's, you know, I mean, this is not a mortal sin. This is something that, again, could be done intelligently, mm-hmm. With, you know, maintaining. you know, good use and still develop a certain look, which may appeal to some people and not to others. I think it's very easy to judge that. But I think the general, problem for most people is they're not strong enough. And I say the same thing about running. You know, you ask your average person to run for their bus and it's like, oh my God, you better get the paddles in here in a hurry because, you know, that person's going to, you know, going to need the transplant. Mm-hmm. And this is ridiculous. This is, something I think that's, you know, particularly in the United States and I think in Canada and in Great Britain, this is a major concern to health officials at all levels. People are incredibly unfit, and the costs to the health care systems are enormous. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the Alexander world, we have this idea, you know, the directions of lengthening and widening, and in my view, the widening direction seems to be winning out over the lengthening these days. You know,
well, I don't think that's what FM had in mind when he
talked
about widening.
I'm not pointing any fingers here, you know, I think if a lot of Alexander teachers sort of you know, started. Well, I'm going to make a lot of friends on this one, but
You already have, Malcolm. You already have.
Started,
but, you know,
if
I could just ever so briefly return to the topic here, we're kind of getting a little bit towards the end of the interview, but I want to just mention one other topic and maybe get a quick comment from you on. Getting back to your original statement, the purpose of exercise is to get stronger, and of course we qualified that. But I think another purpose that people have a lot is cardiovascular fitness. And again, if you are tensing your neck unnecessarily to achieve that fitness, to do the running or swimming or whatever it is that you're using to build up that cardiovascular fitness, you're kind of getting in the way with the neck tension, because the neck tension pretty much always results in compromise in your breathing ability, and probably, although I don't know if I could back this up with any hard data, but I can't imagine that it helps the actual circulatory system function well either, in terms of getting blood to the brain if you're tightening your neck. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I'm of two minds. You know, I think that in the, you know, at least in the Alexander community, there's this idea that you shouldn't pick up your pencil because you might tense your neck, you know? And, and my feeling is, so what? It doesn't matter if you tense your neck. What you need to learn to do is untense it. And so if you work out and your neck gets a little bit tense in the process, well, you'll improve that if it's important to you. And you learn to work out with less neck tension. And that's something that you'll develop an ability and a skill to do with time and experience. But what I see more often is this fear of doing anything for fear that you might tense your neck. Well, you know, you're tensing your neck is not a mortal sin. And it's not the end of the day. You can tense your neck, and then if you're an Alexander person, you can free it up afterwards. And it's not the end of the world.
But
you do need
to know that that's an issue, and you
absolutely
do need to
and you
know.
Don't want to just be blind to it, but you don't want to let it. Cause you just to not try anything, you know. I think it's okay to try and make mistakes, and learn from them. But what I see more and more is this fear of even trying for fear of going wrong, and I think that's a far greater danger than tightening up your neck occasionally.
Right. Well, and I think what you're alluding to there are some tendencies within the Alexander technique teaching profession. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
And for people actually listening to us, who most of whom are not going to be Alexander teachers, this is not something you need to worry about.
Yeah.
And I think this might be, though, a good point to bring the podcast to a close. My guest today has been Malcolm Bock, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Montreal, also teaches at Plattsburgh State University in New York. And he is the author of Master the Art of Running and Master the Art of Working Out. And if anyone out there is intrigued by our conversation and would like to explore the Alexander technique, if you live in the Montreal area, give Malcolm a call. We'll put a link to his website by the interview. And if you are somewhere else, just find a local teacher. And Alexander teachers can work with you while you're doing your workout, or they could work with you outside of the workout situation and show you how to apply what you've learned to working out. So, Malcolm, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Rob, as always, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.